Welcome back to this afternoon of Osmo DevCon 2024. Now we are presenting on high performance I/O using I/O U-Ring and Osmo I/O. This is co-presented by Andreas and me. And yeah, so we both worked on different parts of this at different time, and we will jump back and forth through this presentation with you. And yeah, now for the beginning, I hand over to Andreas. Yeah.
Okay, so a little bit about the content. Before we go into I/O U-Ring, we want to explain what Pollen Select is, so we can see the benefits of it, of I/O U-Ring. Then, of course, we will introduce I/O U-Ring, how it works, and how you can program it. And then there will be the implementation in libosmo core. It's called Osmo I/O. It will cover how it's how you can program your applications with that. And also, there's some issue with SCTP that we want to cover. And last but not least, users of Osmo I/O. So programs or code that already uses Osmo I/O and maybe how it performs.
Okay. Yeah, so traditionally, of course, the most naive way of doing I/O is doing blocking I/O. You just open a file descriptor and you read and or write to it, and that blocks until data arrives or until your data is written. That only works in trivial applications or with applications that spawn threads, so the thread serves only a single I/O request. So that's just to contrast with the non-blocking I/O.
Okay. Okay, for example, if you want to do a non-blocking I/O, the first thing is you need to open a file, or you, for example, you do it like this, you get a file descriptor, or you can create a socket and also you get a file descriptor of that. I don't cover how to bind and connect, just the file descriptor in this case. And what we also need to do, we need to put the file descriptor in non-blocking state. And this is why, because we have many file descriptors. So if we want to read from a file, we cannot wait until there's data, then we might miss some data from another file or another socket. So we need to put it in non-blocking I/O state.
Yeah. Yeah, so the first thing we did ever since the beginning of OsmoCom and BSC Hack and OpenBSC and whatever it was called back in the day, we started to use Select. Select is a mechanism that sadly only works for file descriptor numbers less than 1024, which might have been sufficient in Unix in the 1980s. Maybe the early 1990s, but it becomes a problem. Even, let's say, if you think of Osmo BSC serving 255 BTSs with 40 RX each, you're already reaching the number 1,000 because each of them has an RSL connection, plus the OML, plus all the other ones. So you exceed this limitation of 1,024 in terms of file descriptor numbers. One of the big problems in terms of performance of Select is that this so-called FD set, the file descriptor set, needs to be reinitialized on every iteration. So every time you, basically before you go into Select, you need to rebuild this file descriptor set from scratch, and that is additional effort. The complexity of the inner loop, that's basically a loop going through over the Select and so on, I think we call it Osmo Select Main in our world in libosmo core, is O with max FD plus one. So even if you only have two or three file descriptors, there's a lot of complexity, computational complexity involved in Select. So it's actually not good if you only have a few FDs. It only becomes more efficient in quotes when you reach the 1024 at all. So yeah, we implemented this from day one. We entered poll and yeah.
The first thing you need to do, if you use poll, for example, you have to fill an array of a structure. You have to define which file descriptors you have and which events you want to get, want to poll. And this you have to do for every time you, before you call poll. And also you can provide a timeout if your application uses timers, so you set a timeout to the nearest timer. And then you wait. And what happens then? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So poll in comparison to select solves the problem of the maximum file descriptor limit. So we can have more than 1,000. We can have file descriptor numbers who exceed 1,024. And we don't need to reset that FD set because the poll FD is static. So the complexity is slightly lower, particularly with lower number of file descriptors, but that's not really the critical case here. The kernel side, there's no performance difference because in the kernel, poll and select are handled by the same code. And we switched to poll in 2020 with libosmo core 1.5.0, which I think is actually rather late, surprisingly late, that we made it with select that long.
Yeah. Okay, after you've polled, you get events back for reading or writing, depending on what you requested. For example, if it returns before the timeout, then we have one or more file descriptors we can read or form or write to. Read is done simply by a normal read, and write also, And what I don't cover here, you can also use send to and stuff like this, depending on what I/O you have. Yeah, but there's a problem with that. We have many file descriptors, we already covered that. So we have to prepare the array before each poll or select call. And after that, we have to parse the array and see which events we have. Yeah, and also, we need to do a system call for every read and write and wait for the kernel to complete that, and this takes time, even if it's non-blocking I/O. Yeah, and also the kernel then must copy memory from user space to kernel space or back, and this also is overhead.
Yeah, so one of the alternatives, I looked into alternatives to improve this, is ePoll that already was introduced in Linux 2.6, well, 2.5 unstable series. The complexity of the inner loop then only is of the number of ready file descriptors, so you can have a million registered, but it doesn't matter anymore in terms of performance. So that clearly outperforms poll, but in our case, actually, we may have many of those that actually return something. So if we have, you know, thousands of BTSs, all 1,000 of them might have some data ready, so sort of the complexity remains the same. There's also something called POSIX AIO. In theory, it's an improvement. In practice, at least on Linux, it sucks, because the completion events are signaled using signals. And if you know how Unix and signals and all the problems they introduce, not the best idea. And also, like API-wise, is nice, but on GNU/Linux, it's implemented in glibc. So it's just a wrapper around, I think, poll in the end, or maybe epoll. So it doesn't really provide any benefit there. There's also libAIO, which is a Linux-specific asynchronous I/O mechanism, but it only supports like block devices and files and no sockets, so it's also not usable for us. And luckily, IOU ring came to the rescue, and it has memory mapped submission and completion queues that are mapped between kernel and user space. The application requests I/O by putting something into a submission queue, and the kernel indicates completion of some I/O operation by putting an entry into completion queue. And this mapped nature avoids the copying back and forward. Note that I'm not talking about copying the data, but I'm talking about copying the request and response event structures in this point. You can also, but yeah, let's cover that later.
Yeah, okay, let me first explain how IOU ring works. So actually, there are two ring buffers that are shared between kernel and user space. One is the submission queue, and the other is the completion queue. So if we want to send something to the kernel, first we create a submission queue element. That's the blue in the top left. And we look at the tail pointer, and then we write this submission queue element behind the tail pointer. And then we raise the tail pointer. And the kernel compares the head and tail pointer, and if they're different, that means there's something in the queue. Then the kernel looks at the head pointer, reads from the head pointer, and gets the submission queue element. And after processing that, the kernel, or if it's completed, the kernel puts a completion queue element on the completion queue behind the tail pointer, then it raises the tail pointer. So the application sees, okay, head and tail pointer are not equal. And this means the application can then read after the head pointer, and after it has done it, it raises the head pointer, and so the queue becomes empty then.
Yeah. So there's a bit of setup that also needs to be done before that. There's something called IOURing setup, which is a library function of libUring, a user space utility library for IOURing, that creates such an instance of two mapped shared memory queues or ring buffers. Then there's the question of how the completion is notified. As Andreas pointed out, we can compare those pointers and figure out whether a new entry has been put into the queue, a completion queue. So if your program is waiting for completion of an event by the kernel, we can constantly look at those pointers whether they change. But that's, of course, would be busy waiting, which is not a smart idea either. So you can actually register an event file descriptor. EventFD is a generic Linux kernel mechanism. We use it also in other contexts for the inter-thread queue, for example, in libOSMO core. And so you can basically create a virtual file descriptor in EventFD and associate that with the IOURing so that when IOURing completes something, at least one element in the completion queue, this magic virtual file descriptor becomes readable and you can register that in your normal select or poll loop and then basically learn about something has completed on IOURing. And this way you can very nicely integrate some IO being done by legacy select poll code and some IO being done by IOURing. And since all of that gets merged into your select or poll that you handle.
Yeah, okay, let's get an example. If you want to use IOURing, you can use libIOURing, so it provides functions for you. For example, if we want to write something, first we call IOURing get SQE, so a submission queue element we create. We also provide the ring. And then we can call this write function. We have a file descriptor, we have a buffer with our data, we have a count, and also we can add some number if we want to seek in the file. And also we can set some private data if our application uses objects, so we can match the completion with the submission using the private pointer. And then, of course, we submit that SQE to the ring, and this raises the tail pointer. So when we want to read the completion, as you already said, we have this event FD. It becomes readable. And so what we do is we go through this loop and read all completion queue elements that are in the queue. And for every element, we can get our private pointer if we need that. Also, we can get a result code if there's some error, or if we have if the socket gets closed, we have a zero. And then after we have done that, we can call this function, and this raises the head pointer, and so the completion queue becomes empty again.
Early on, the first thing we did in the OSMOCOM world in terms of IOURing is the GTP load generator that I wrote a couple of years ago. So IOURing, I think, was introduced in 2019, so it was 2 years old. So at that time, I think some distribution kernels already had picked up on IOURing support. So what this load generator does, it generates a lot of GTPU flows. So you configure a number of flows over a configure a number of threads, configure a number of destination IP addresses, and so on. Showed some extremely promising results. I don't recall what the figures were, but I guess it was even on my old laptop something like more than 4 gigabits or something that I could make with lots of different flows. From a user space program, I think it was unseen at that time with that speed. The load generator is still out there. This is directly using IOURing without any kind of abstraction. But it was a first sort of experience in this new mechanism, and it was pretty successful, pretty nice, worked as expected. Then the question was how to move ahead with doing this in libOSMO core, which we will get to later, but first Andreas with a specific problem.
Yeah, okay, so when we want to get, how do we know when the socket is connected, for example? What we can do, we can submit an empty write request to the ring, and this write request stays there until the connection is completed, or if the socket failed. So if the socket failed, we can, we want to know if the socket failed or if the socket is connected. So we call getSocketOpt to read the error. If it fails, there's no error. If it doesn't fail, then the error number is set.
Yeah, and so what we introduced in libOSMO core is called OSMO IO. That we introduced, and the main difference between our existing library abstraction and the new library abstraction is that if you think of it, if you want to sum it up, our old OSMO FD code, where you OSMO FD register and all that kind of stuff, it's an abstraction about notifying IO availability. So the actual read call or the actual write call is performed by the application that uses libOSMO core, not by libOSMO core itself. And that doesn't work with IOU ring because it's delayed, it's in a queue, it's happening somewhere else. So we actually need to move the actual read and write operations into libOSMO core. It becomes an abstraction level or an API based around performing the IO asynchronously and not about notifying IO availability. And this, as I said, the name of this new API is called OSMO IO, and it's a generic interface. It's not specifically tied to IOU ring. We just use this as a first step to then later on sort of be able to swap the underlying implementation of doing this IO using IOU ring.
Yeah. Okay, this is a mistake. Okay, if you want to use it in your application, it has multiple backends, as Harald already said, I think. We have a switch. So by default, it's using POL, and you can switch it to use IOU ring, depending on your. You can do it at runtime. Then you have to create an instance of the OSMO IO. I call it the OSMO or the IOFD. So with setup, you can create this instance, and with free, you can destroy this instance. And you can also provide the file descriptor if you already have that, and also provide a private pointer so your application knows to which instance the events belong to. And you also can provide IO ops structure, and these are the callbacks for reading and writing. So whenever every time when there's a read, your application gets called, and this callback, you have to define that. Before you can use that object, you have to register or unregister. So if you have, for example, connected the socket or opened the socket, not yet connected. You can register that file descriptor, and if you're done with that, you can unregister, and reuse that instance for a later connection maybe. There's no write enable or read enable in OSMO IO. It's done automatically. So write is enabled when the user sends data and when it's stored in the TX queue automatically. And it's automatically disabled if the queue is empty. So read is automatically enabled if you provide a read callback, and if you don't provide a read callback because you don't need it, it's disabled. Okay, for example, if you want to write something, we can use this write function. We provide a message buffer because everything in OSMO IO is using message buffers. And there are other functions like send to, receive from, but I don't show them here in this example. And the read is performed through the callback function. So you define a callback function in the IO operations, and then you do the implementation for that, and what you get is you get the IOFD, and there you will also find the private pointer if you need that. You get the result code. And also, you get the message buffer of the received data. Yeah, and also, other read functions are not shown here. Okay, then there's a special function. This is notify connected. We just tell OSMO IO that we want to get a notification if we get a socket connected. and when the socket is connected or when the socket failed, the write callback function is called. And this is how it looks like. Also, we get the result code and the IOFD for the private pointer. And this needs to be done before the registration. I will come to that later. Yeah, and to make it complete, you also have functions to get and set your callback functions. So if you want to change it, during that, you can use these functions. Yeah, and as I said, this automatically enables or disables the read. Yeah, there's some issue with SCTP. For some reason, IOU ring does not work, or the connect does not work with SCTP in IOU ring. So maybe there's a kernel bug. But the idea was not to debug this problem. The idea was to have a solution that works now. And actually, the idea, the workaround is we use poll and select or select before we have a connection. So we can register it with Osmo FD register. And once,
maybe say in this context, the application doesn't have to do that, right? Yeah. So it's libOSMO core, the IOFD automatically transparently handles this. This is just explaining how it does it internally. You as a user don't need to do any of that.
Yeah, you just have to call this connect function.
Is it done in libOSMO core or in libOSMO native?
It's done in libOSMO. The question was, is it done in libOSMO core or is it in libOSMO native? It's in libOSMO core.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as I said, once it's connected, then further operations can continue on the IOU ring.
Yeah. So maybe just the kernel bug. The point was basically we need something that we can roll out to users today. So even if we fix the kernel bug, and we still should fix and debug it, it takes years until it will show up in all the distributions, since nobody cares about SCTP, and getting that into updates for stable distributions and so on will be a long road. So that's why we just said, okay, let's do a workaround first, so it works today, and then that bug can still be addressed later on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so this is the migration status. What kind of subsystems or parts of Osmo Foo have been migrated? So the libOSMO core GSM tab source has been converted because it was very simple to convert. And also it's used a lot in many subsystems. If you have GSM tab based logging, or if you have, a physical layer GSM tab enabled or something like that. The MGCP client also is not a very high profile target in terms of doing a lot of I/O, but it was very easy to convert, so it was done. That means Osmo BSC, MSC, and Home Node B Gateway can send and receive MGCP using IOU ring now. The NS2 code, that's the modern GPRS network services layer, that's used in Osmo PCU, GBproxy, and SGSN is converted, so that goes through IOU ring, with also an easy target because it's UDP based. And the much more challenging target was to convert libOSMO NetIF, the stream client for TCP and particularly for SCTP. So this means that now any kind of signaling connections done by Osmo CBC, Osmo BSC, Osmo also Osmo STP in this case, all of the signaling, the SS7 related signaling they are doing can be done through Osmo IO. If you set that environment variable, then it will it's done through Osmo IO, and if you set that environment variable, it will be done using IOU ring, to be specific. And the last conversion that has been merged to so this is the state in master, is the Osmo Media Gateway, where the RTP audio send and receive has been migrated over to libOSMO IO, and in my performance benchmark, it's an almost exactly 50% performance increase of the throughput, of the reduction of CPU utilization of Osmo MGW if you compare it. So I don't recall the details, I put it in the ticket, but in the load testing I did with a lot of load, this was sort of the result of that. And maybe we should have maybe said this at the beginning of the slide, but one of the reasons for doing all of this was primarily because if you look at Osmo BSC, if we go back to what Michael presented on earlier today, he showed us a perf top output where the paging was showing up. But after the paging was solved, the next thing that was showing up was system call entry and system call exit overhead of all the I/O that we were doing. And so that was the reason for introducing Osmo I/O and moving to IOU ring, so we can get rid of all this extra system call overhead in there. So yeah, that's the status. So what is to be done? So if we look at the BSC, which is an important target in optimization, we have basically done everything towards the core network side and everything towards the media gateway, but we are lacking the ABIS side towards the BTS still, and that is unfortunately a rather challenging task. Because, well, if you've ever looked at our IP access, IPA multiplex code, it's split over three different libraries, a very unclean architecture. It basically, it was just some functions that we had in BSC hack that were moved into libosmo core, and then some of them were moved to libosmo abis, and some of them were moved to libosmo netif. And there's three different ways of doing everything. And it's very convoluted with all the dependencies. And so, yeah, that, and also that ABIS has the only interface that has this special legacy of the ABIS E1 versus ABIS over IP. So that's a bit of a challenge. That's why it hasn't been done yet. What should be rather easy is the ORTP side. That means Osmo BTS, RTP, send and receive. That should be done. Also, in Osmo BTS in general, I think stuff like also the physical layer interface or the TRX protocol should be rather simple conversions, because anything that's UDP is very easy to convert in general. It's this logical change of signaling I/O availability versus doing the actual I/O in the library, but apart from that, that's fine. The stats tree reporter also hasn't been converted yet. I think I looked into it, and sort of there's a trade-off. We can migrate it to IOU ring, but it means that we have much more dynamic allocation in Telog. So right now, the stats tree reporter, no matter how many stats you write, I think that somehow the buffer is kept persistent. But if we move it to IOU ring, we need one dynamic allocation for every I/O that we submit, which right now we don't have. So I still think it will be a gain, but sort of it's a bit of a, not a very clear-cut case. I think that needs some benchmarking. Then there's also control in VTY, but it's not very important because usually we don't expect a lot of traffic and I/O on those interfaces, so it's not a critical task to migrate those. So yeah, that's, I think it has two links to the two reference documents on IOU ring that I would recommend anyone with an interest in this from Jens Exper. And I think that brings us to Osmo IOFD close at the end of this talk. And I think we have time for questions. Yeah, so yeah, if anyone has questions. I guess we need to split the microphone there.
Did you do any measurements also on like how much slow or speedy it is once you move from like regular like Osmo FD to Osmo IOFD without using IOU ring, so still using pull behind it, because then you need to allocate more message peers and all that. So
I think I did some benchmarking on that, but I don't recall the details. It was already more than half a year ago, and you know, my memory is not what it used to be, but I think it was not considerable. So in my memory, there was not a big difference between those two. It was, it's really, I think the system call entry and exit overhead is so much bigger in terms of an order of magnitude than anything you do in terms of allocating a couple of more message buffers or stuff like that, which is like, yes, it's also not good, but it's at a much, you know, lower complexity and lower CPU cycle use kind of scale.
Just by random, I asked myself, when did IOU ring come up? So I looked on the wiki page. It says since kernel 5.1. And then it also says a lot of kernel exploits come from IOU ring. Do you know anything about that? Or what's our stance on it?
Yeah, that's correct. I think it was I think we both prepared slides lacking coordination. I think I had a slide in my slides about that, but in the merged slides it was not in there. But this famous Google report where it says, what was it, 59% or something like that of all the exploits came from IOU Ring. So Google disabled IOU Ring in Android and on Google servers and on Chrome OS. And also, for example, LXC containers by default use a seccomp filter to disable IOU Ring from inside containers. So you're not permitted to do it unless you explicitly give that permission to containers. So yes, I mean, basically, it's the biggest architectural change in the way how user-space programs interact with the kernel ever since Linux came out. So it's not really surprising that a lot of new bugs get introduced. It's of course very sad, but in the end I think it's a choice that everyone needs to make, and we are not forcing anyone to use IOU Ring, right? They can just not set that environment variable, and if they want to stay on the safe side and rather have the, let's say, existing level of performance, they can stay with Poll. But if they want to go for IOU Ring, then they can enable it that way. So it's a choice, not a...
Yeah. Why the environment variable and not a config option?
The question is why the environment variable and not a config option? Not sure. I think it was Daniel back then. Maybe we discussed it. Why? I don't recall. I think not every Osmocom program has a VTY. Right? There are lots of small tools, for example, like one-shot things where you don't have a VTY. Where then you can also do it this way. I mean, it doesn't have to stay that way all the time. I mean, we can still add a VTY option if or something like that later on, or change the default in a couple of years down the road. It was just an easy way to do it now. And I think also in production, the ideas, of course, the same would be with the config, but the idea would be that sort of if you run into some kind of problem, you can always quickly restart the program with a different setting, and then you can see basically if it still crashes or if it starts to behave correct again or whatever, so to quickly switch back and forth.
You mentioned some benchmarks earlier with GTP, and I'm wondering, for Osmo GGSN, we have kernel GTPU. So if we use Osmo IOU Ring instead, if it's maybe similarly fast as the kernel GTPU?
No. I think, so you still need to schedule from the kernel into a user space process and back, right, to do all this stuff. So we're still doing a lot of scheduling between like the kernel and the task, basically, which means you have lots of cache invalidation and other things going on, and that sort of wastes performance there. And also, we are still actually copying the data right now, right? We have shared queues for the structures describing the I/O function, but the actual data is still copied between kernel memory and user space memory. Now there are zero copy extensions to IOU Ring in later kernels that you can enable, where then you have so-called registered buffers or something like that, where you pre-allocate memory and you sort of nail that down, and then the kernel and the process have a shared mapping, and then you can use that for your message buffers. And I think I did some testing in the RTP load generator, and it didn't really make a significant difference. I was always thinking I'm doing something wrong, but no, I checked everything, and it for sockets at least, maybe it makes a difference for file-based I/O if you write like with gigabyte large writes or something like that. But for the small messages, it didn't really make a significant difference in my view. But to get back to your point, if you do something completely in the kernel, then you bypass all this scheduling a process and any additional copying of the data. So it's a much more streamlined task. Actually, for high-speed networking, you want to go even further, and that goes into the XDP stuff, which I'm going to talk about, where you bypass even large parts of the kernel network stack because it's so slow compared to modern wire speeds. And so, yeah, I think we will not replace the kernel GTP module with that. Rather, we would replace the kernel GTP module with something that's even closer to the network interface card.
Um, About the message buffers, I think the short messages and message buffers are probably just cached in L3 cache of the CPUs today, which then internally basically make it a knob to do a memcopy on that. One different thing, this of course makes S-trace useless. How do you trace IOU ring efficiently? Is there a cool tool for that? Or
yeah, it's actually something I wanted to mention. I forgot. I thought about it during the talk. But no, I'm not aware of any good tool. I mean, you can, of course, use all kinds of function tracing and PPF trace and whatnot. But that's not a cool tool. Yeah, but it's actually rather interesting. It's always a good way, nice way to check if really IOU ring is active or not. You do an S trace in the process. And if you don't see any reads or writes anymore, but it's still passing data, then you know IOU ring is in operation. But yeah, of course, you don't have that level of visibility. But So we will have to see how much that becomes a problem in the future. I think if you're S-tracing a process, then it cannot be performance critical anywhere because S-trace is also super expensive. So in that case, I would just say switch back to the poll, use the environment variable, and then do your tracing. So avoiding that problem this way. But yeah, I mean, it's basically a way of doing system calls without doing system calls. So it's really changing things from a user perspective significantly. Okay. Then, thanks again. And I have to check what's next on the schedule. I have my printed schedule somewhere.